Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days. I mean, days
I feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York podcast.
Perhaps you are the kind of person who loves uncertainty, unpredictability. When things don't go your way, you get excited. You say, oh, this is a great opportunity to practice balance and equanimity. Perhaps you are that type of person. If that's the case, then this is maybe not the podcast for you. If, however, you're like me, you can't stand uncertainty, life's little moments of things not going the way you want them to are not a cause for celebration. Instead, they are an opportunity to brood and to remember that the world is a conspiracy against you. And beyond just the little annoyances of day-to-day life, the greater uncertainties of the human condition, the cosmic uncertainties, are terrifying, frankly. If that's you in any way, shape, or form, then this is the perfect podcast for you. Riding the waves of uncertainty. That's what Vegan Aharonian is going to talk about. In his podcast debut, Vegan is a 20-year veteran in the meditation skirmishes. He has been practicing and studying meditation for the last 20 years or so. In addition to being a regular teacher at the New York Shambhala Center, he's also taught in Russia and the Ukraine, of all places. But before we get to that, I do want to mention that the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York is presenting its introductory weekend, Shambhala Training Weekend 1, Feel Human Again, the weekend of October 28th. Now, I've spoken about this for a while. Maybe you're interested, but it's all feeling a little vague. Well, let me just tell you a little bit more about the weekend. It's a Friday night talk, a Saturday meditation workshop. There'll be an extended instruction, opportunities to meet one-on-one with an instructor to discuss your meditation practice, opportunities to ask questions and have discussion in a group context, and lots of opportunities to meditate, to get to know what it's like to meditate for extended periods of time. With support, you can do it. It's quite dramatic to experience a weekend of meditation. And, you know, come check it out. If you can't do the whole weekend, you can at least come for the Friday night talk, October 28th. For more information and to register, go to ny.shambhala.org, click the link on the homepage, Feel Human Again, Shambhala Training Weekend 1. And now, talking about uncertainty. Uncertainty. I'm certain that today's talk is about uncertainty. Here is Vegan Aharonian.
So the topic is uncertainties. Uncertainties in life, unpredictability. Now, one other thing I want to get out of the way. My name is Vegan, as you heard, but I'm not vegan. People ask me all the time, so I want you to not think about that throughout my talk. It's just an Armenian name. It's a relatively typical Armenian name, Vegan. And another thing, yeah, it's Armenian name, so my accent, so you don't have to guess what my accent is I grew up speaking Armenian and Russian, so it's a mixture of the two. Uncertainty. So we run into unpredictable things all day long. There are sometimes big things, but I'm even more interested today in small things that cause some kind of annoyances, maybe minor annoyances. the train just left. You arrived at the subway station. The train just left. You are coming to a cross section, and it's a red light, and you think, if I was just a second faster, I would cross the street. Something doesn't smell right as you, or somebody smokes. You, but I don't like the smoke. If I walk and suddenly I feel smoke, I hold my breath. There are a huge number of things that keep us on our toes. Perhaps maybe it's too strong, but as I said, minor annoyances, irritations. Things that don't happen the way we would like them to happen. In the announcement, if you read on the website, I mentioned a few things. A flat tire. I had the reason I came up with a flat tire when I wrote that is because recently I was traveling in Italy a couple of weeks ago, and we rented a car. And on the first day after, in the morning, we rented the car in Rome and we were driving to Pisa. And on the way, we wanted to stop on the beach and have, I was with my son, two of us. We were going to have our first in this lifetime swim in the Mediterranean Sea. I've never been on the, so it was quite a big deal. So we came to this island. A few people told us there is a beautiful island between Rome and Pisa called Porto Santa Stefano, if anybody knows. Beautiful island. We rode around the island was connected through a bridge to the land. So we drove around the island, found a place to the beach where we could park there. And so I get out of the car and I see we have a flat tire. So I had that initial reaction, oh man. And then I told my son, see, we have a flat tire, but okay, we'll deal with it later. We went to the beach. So things like that keep happening all the time. Here is why this topic is important. Buddhism in general Buddha started his search for wisdom, for solutions, when he realized that human life is full of suffering. And so he started to analyze the suffering and how to resolve it. And so there are three major sources of suffering, and changes in life, pain of change, is the second of them. It's one of the three major topics. What causes us to feel uncomfortable? The word suffering is a big word, but it covers from little things to serious depressing factors. Changes. Well, there are many types of changes. Some changes are predictable. I'm losing hair, and my stomach grows. still unpleasant, but kind of expected. Well, I never expected my stomach to grow. I was always so skinny, and when suddenly, no matter how much I ate, I was always skinny, and suddenly now it does accumulate. That's an unexpected change. But these little surprises, sometimes big surprises, they do throw us out of balance. So once we explored, everybody got in touch with your fears of when plans fail. Let's look into why would it throw us our balance? Why do we have reactions we have? And I'll list a few things, but I want everybody to think, what do you think? Maybe I'll pause actually for 15 seconds. Why do you think these things cause discomfort? There are several reasons I can mention, and it wouldn't be a complete list. But it has to do with some sense of insecurity, losing control of a situation. If it has to do with other people not cooperating, we can get upset that people don't cooperate, they don't play along, they don't follow our plan. It could be we lose time. I dropped my phone into water once. It was probably most people did at one point. That was another trip. We were traveling. We were in Prague, in Czech Republic, and we were about to run to see something on the clock. In the Prague, they have a historic clock, and every half an hour or 15 minutes, there's a whole spectacle happening in the clock. And we were late, and so anyway. So I had to spend time dealing with the, I ignored that it's wet, we went to look, and then I had to figure out, go online and see what people do, and it turned out that there are some methods, you use rice, and then we had to go to a store and buy some rice. I learned a new trick, it was an educational mishap. So now if anybody drops the phone in my presence, I know what to tell them. I can be helpful, which is more important than my little annoyance. Our plan fails in some ways, and that's unpleasant and annoying. If we go back to the flat tire in Italy, though, after my initial reaction, by the third second, I said, all right, we'll deal with this later, let's go swim. And we did go to swim, we spent maybe an hour on the beach, and then I told my son, well, after all, we have a flat tire, we have to deal with it. And we went back and started dealing with that. Why else would these things annoy us? We lose control, and that's unpleasant. And maybe sometimes it hurts our ego. When I drop my phone, I could think, I'm not a sloppy person, I'm pretty coordinated and I know what I do, and kind of this breaks my image, who I am, and right, that could be one of the reasons. Can you think of anything else? Any other reasons why would these things throw us out of balance? You can just scream from your seat.
Why throws off balance? Because that's not what you planned for.
You didn't plan for it, yes. Feeling disrespected. With the car, I didn't expect at all. We rented the cheapest car there was, which was a Smart, but they didn't have it, they gave us Audi. And I thought, Audi, flat tire, why? Expectations, yes. We do have a lot of expectations from ourselves. That's a more general, yes. It covers a lot of aspects. We expect certain scenarios to play out. We have expectations about ourselves and cars not breaking down. And uncertainty. We typically don't like uncertainties. Occasionally we have pleasant surprises, but I was wondering when I was thinking about this talk, if you ask people, if you survey people, do you want a surprise party, a surprise on your birthday? I think a lot of people would say, I would prefer to know in advance what's coming up, even though I know it's planned for to please me. Still, most people would like to have some predictability there. Yeah.
In some ways, it's like we're in a frame of mind where we have decided what will make us happy.
Yeah. If you go back again to that my Italian trip, we were planning to arrive to Pisa that evening. And so when we came back and I started calling, the phone was speaking Italian. There was a recording in Italian, which I don't understand. And then somebody was passing by. I asked him, do you speak English? He said, yes. And I gave him the phone. He said, but I don't speak Italian. I should say that day, dealing with the car, and actually the next day too, brought us a lot of unexpected adventures. So first I spent an hour, no less, maybe half an hour on the phone. He finally got somebody on the phone. He didn't speak Italian, but could understand. He was Swiss, so he knew a little Italian. So he helped me to get to the person, to click the right buttons to get to the person. And then they said, okay, we'll send you a truck and he'll figure out whether he can fix your tire or he will replace the car. I said, all right, that's what I expect. And we went to find some food, and then there was a single road coming, so we went toward the road where the truck would come. And at some point, while we were looking what to eat, I saw a truck. I stopped him. I said, that's us. He said, okay, we got in the car. He says, do you speak Italian? I say, no, English. He says, no, English. And then he asked, do we speak Russian? He turned out to be from Moldova, which was another republic from former Soviet Union. So he spoke Russian, was very colorful, rough guy. He was swearing half the words of what he was saying after us. So he drove us back. He said, you have to call them back. You have to yell at them so they get your car. I'll just take your car and then you'll deal with them. Anyway, so we ended up, we had to find a place to stay on that island. So while we were eating in the restaurant, we were calling Airbnb, find a place. I'm not here to just tell about my trip. It's just it was a surprise after surprise that we had to deal with. It wasn't pleasant, but this type of unpredictability, this I'm reasonably okay with. So eventually we found a very nice place. It was much more expensive than I would choose to stay, but there was only one place on that island that was on Airbnb, and so I sent a message. The guy responded right away while we were still eating that I have a place and I can come and pick you up. So he came and picked us up, and his car broke in the middle of it. It was maybe 2 mile distance from where we were. But he came on an old American car, and it stopped maybe 200 yards before their house. Anyway, it was just a fun thing to do. We went there, and he was a very interesting. It was kind of a mansion. At least in my opinion, on my scale of things, it looked like a mansion. They had part of the beach belonging to their house. It was on a slope, had many rounded, it was a rounded. He explained how they used feng shui to build principles to build the house. It was a very nice evening after all, and the next morning we spent half a day on their private beach. This wasn't planned, and this was probably the most memorable day of our trip after all. The second half of the day I had to deal with the car again. They told me that I have to take a train to a nearby town, and they have the car, and by the time we came there, we walked from the train station. It was closing now. It was a very hot day like today, and I didn't want to take taxi. I thought we'll walk. And then we come to the place at around 5:20. They close at 6, and it says, you need an automatic transmission. I don't have cars with automatic transmission. They ask me if I have a smart. That's what I have smart, but it's manual transmission. Anyway, we had to take a train to Pisa after that. But anyway, through all of this, and there was incidents when we were walking from the train station to that Europe card. I was asking people, our phone stopped communicating. I mean, my internet connection, something was wrong with the SIM card, I guess. I couldn't use the map anymore. So we had to talk to people. It was rural. There weren't that many people in the streets. But anyway, so we had to talk to Italians, which was part of visiting a country. At some point, we spoke, asked somebody to... direction, they didn't speak English, and there was a beautiful woman who just drove by and asked her, do you speak English? She stopped thinking, does she speak English? And she, anyway, there were these small things that were pleasant, actually, to some extent. And that happens if you think about your experiences. Very often, what you don't expect and don't want to happen, after all, ends up with some interesting, depending on your attitude. I could have been very annoyed by all of this all the time, but I wasn't, and as I already said, this was one of the most memorable days of our trip. A few days ago, I talked to a neighbor. And well, a couple of years ago, she kept, every time I saw her, she kept complaining about her job. Her boss, her environment, she was worrying she will lose her job on one hand, on the other hand, she wanted to lose her job, to find another job. And for 2 years. And eventually she did lose her job and she found another one. And when I was talking to her, she said that I learned the lesson that I should have dropped that job a long time ago. For 2 years, I was afraid of the change, and the change actually was a good thing. So let's get back to analyze these situations. We do lose balance when things don't go the way we like. And we discussed that this is usually because we want to have a control. It hurts our feelings. We might lose. Might be forced to spend time differently than what we planned to do. And we don't welcome it, usually. We also now see that if we welcome it, sometimes it might be even more useful than what we were planning to do. That's a very interesting observation, that sometimes it might be much better to get interested in the unexpected situation and, if not enjoy it, but engage in it with some sense of welcoming. Okay, this came my way, why won't I figure out how to deal with this the best I can? It's possible to have that attitude. In other words, we would have to let go of our expectation. We were expecting things to happen a certain way. If we could let go of what we wanted to happen and rearrange our attention to what we want to happen, what actually was thrown at us. In order to be able to do that, this is a very important point. In order to be able to do this, we need to have some trust. Now we're getting to the core of the teachings, to closer to Shambhala teachings. Trusting that whatever happens is... it's not necessarily a perfect, wonderful thing, but it has some meaning into this. I can deal with it. Trusting that I can deal with this. And whatever happens with it, it's okay too. Even if I don't figure this out perfectly, even if it doesn't really, if I can't turn it around to be exactly as I want to be, it's still okay. Having that trust is what is the backbone that can give us the confidence and walk through life with confidence that I don't have to control everything. Whatever happens is okay, I'll deal with it. And it might be a very good thing that it happens not the way I planned. Yeah, that happens all the time. People get upset when they lose jobs, the relationship breaks, a lot of things. And then later it turns out it was the best thing to happen. So if we build that trust, that confidence, that I'll deal with it, I'll figure it out, or at least I'll put the best of my efforts, my skills, my intellectual ability, and whatever happens, happens. It's not the end of the world. We could also have the attitude that things don't happen by mere chance. Maybe it's a better thing. Maybe if our car didn't break down, we would get into an accident later. Maybe yes, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it's good to be late for a flight sometimes. We don't know, and we don't have to figure that out. Think something happened, we have to deal with what happened rather than try to rationalize that this is probably better. It's an unnecessary thing. Trying to rationalize it. Sometimes the rationale comes in itself, sometimes it doesn't. Some of you probably heard the phrase basic goodness. It's a fundamental concept to Shambhala teachings, which is covered in the first weekend of Shambhala training, the level one. But I'll say that the trust that fundamentally, basically, I am okay, I am good as I am. I don't have to prove anybody that I, through my accomplishments or my successes, that I can figure everything out, that I can plan everything perfectly, that nothing goes wrong. Fundamentally, nothing is wrong with me. And what's also very important is there is nothing wrong with the life around me. Things are happening, and there is no fundamental problem with it. There are things we need to deal with, yes. But fundamentally, there is no problem. There is no inherent big problem in it. Cars break, they are fixable, typically, or replaceable, and we can move on. So trusting in the basic goodness of myself and surrounding life is what we can base on in order not to have those reactions we talked about. Now, a fair question that you can ask, and this is where Buddhism is very important. The reason I said that there are a lot of philosophies and teachings where they can advise how to be. And you would agree that, yeah, it would be nicer if I was like this, if I wouldn't react that way, if I could have this perspective on myself and life. But the crucial thing is how to learn to do it. Our reactions are pretty immediate and automatic. When I see the flat tire, this goes before I can think about it. And then subsequent reactions are also, we have the habitual ways of reacting and functioning. And so where the value of these teachings come is they provide not only a different perspective, but also a method how to retrain our mind. Do you guess where I'm hinting, towards what I'm hinting? We have the meditation practice, which helps us realign our mind with our belief. In Buddhism we have this. There are these three ways we can progress along the path. hearing, contemplating, meditating. So we hear the teachings, we read the books, we accept perhaps the ideas, the views, we get a bigger perspective, a bigger view on life, on ourselves. That's when we hear intellectually the teachings. Then we analyze them. That's the contemplation part. We see, does it make sense to me? Do I agree with this? Does it reflect in my experience, my life? We digest this, we chew on it. And some things we accept, some things we might reject. But then after we accept certain things, we want to function in line with what we accepted. And that's a very difficult thing to do because we have a habit of acting certain ways. Certain things irritate us and continue to it, and we react and scream at people, right? So in order to be able to make our mind workable, we want to train it, and meditation is the method to train the mind. What happens in meditation? Well, you can ask me, why would meditation help to realign the mind? When we're sitting to meditate, we set our intention to stay with the breath, to stay in current moment. Breath is what's happening every moment. We want to be present with what happens right now. We say, I don't want to be lost in my trains of thoughts, planning ahead or replaying something that already happened. I want to be present with what happens right now. Then a thought comes, a next thought, train of thought, it steals our minds away, right? And that's habitual behavior of the mind. It jumps from thought to thought. And then we interrupt that by letting that go and coming back. So at some point, our awareness wakes up and tells us, my mind is not on the breath, my mind is somewhere else. And we bring the mind back. What happens at that point, that's the very important point, we're breaking our habitual pattern. We are liberating ourselves from our habitual fears, expectations, and so forth. We come back to reality. We learn to deal with the actual reality that happens now, rather than dealing with what we think might happen. So typically when people face these things, flat tire, you start thinking, spinning scenarios, what am I going to do, where I'm going to sleep, and on and on and on and on. Why did this happen to me? We look who to blame, that's a big one. It's very pleasant to find somebody who is guilty. And if that person is available to yell at them, it's even better. So instead of doing all of that, we can just be present and deal with the actual thing that you have to deal with right now. And so through meditation, we train the mind to be able to let go of that habitual reaction and come back and wake up to reality. We still have to deal with the reality, but it's just the reality that happened rather than our story about what could have been happening. Are you with me? Against me? So it takes a fair amount of open-mindedness. But then once you have that attitude, that sense of confidence that whatever happens, I'm okay with it. It is not a confidence that I'll make it work for me the way I want. Not necessarily. It's the confidence that even if I can't fix it, it's still okay. The world is still okay. I don't have to be able to control everything. That's the big one. Situations when you are confident you'll fix the car, whatever happens to it, is halfway there. It's a bigger confidence when you know that you might be unable to fix the situation and you're still okay with it. That's the real confidence. And once you have some glimpses of that confidence, then you can be a lot more playful and joyful and juggle the circumstances as they are thrown at you. I hope everybody can think of situations where they feel that way. Let's say you are playing, usually it's a situation when you are good at things. Let's say you are good at playing soccer or whatever game or certain situations. Or right now I'm going to, in a minute I'm going to offer you to ask me questions, right? So in order to feel okay with this, I have to have sufficient confidence that either I am able to answer the questions, or if I don't know the answer, I'm okay with it as well, right? So that's the example of that's going to happen right now. But I hope everybody can think of, or at work, you are confident that whatever happens with work, you can deal with it. Either you are pretty much on top of the game, or even if you are not, you know that there are other people you can go to. That adds a lot of freedom to the way we live our lives. Freedom, joy, playfulness. When you wake up in the morning, you are not worrying what can go wrong throughout the day. And that's what a lot of us do throughout the day. We think of what can go wrong and how do I prevent it. If you have the attitude that, all right, whatever I call that goes wrong might be actually a very right thing to happen, and I don't really have to prevent all those things, you still need some plan. You still have to get to work, or most of us have to still go to work. Or you have some plans for the day. And you do go along your plan. I'm not saying that just let everything go and sit on the bed and see what happens. No, we still do things. We go, we have our plan. But if we are totally open to what can go wrong, then it eases the day entirely. And we become a much more pleasant people to deal with too. We are not uptight. Our humor pours out much easier. Right? We don't have that. The third, I remember in the beginning I mentioned three ways we suffer that Buddha established. The third one is called all-pervasive suffering, which are a background uptightness that we hold throughout the day. I feel it in my stomach, I think many people do. A little bit of tightness of wanting to think to go right. Being on time to work, on meetings, I don't know, being able to finish, meet the deadlines, and on and on. There are all these little things that keep us a little tight. We don't perceive it as suffering because it's a background noise. That's the normal situation. That's how we feel all the time. But Buddha called it all-pervasive suffering because we are not just open and free-flowing and just playful and enjoying fully what happens. We are a little bit on our toes. So letting go of control and being open, that's what we look at. And going back, meditation is a method to retrain the mind to cooperate with our intention. All right, it's time to open the floor for questions, comments, disagreements.
The idea of things being all right, is that true? We just ignore what's going on in the world, meaning in France and the terrorism, and how then does social activism come into being? Do we not allow ourselves to be socially active, or that's cut off? It's like a personal thing. That's one thing. And the social activism, what we see, it's not all right. It seems like the world is getting worse around us, but we say it's okay with us, or how do we do this? I'm trying to figure it out, because like what happened in France and these different things you hear every day, you can hardly stand it. So you just say, I'm okay, and that's not. What do you do?
Great, thank you for the question. Very good, yeah. Yes, there are a lot of things in the world we want to improve. Definitely, we don't say, I don't care, whatever happens, I'm okay. Not at all. Not at all entirely, no. But here is where the catch. So yeah, we do apply our effort. If we think that there are things to that need our help, we do get involved. And we put all our effort into that. But the difference is in the attitude. I remember, I mentioned that this Tuesday night gathering started in 98, and I remember at one of the talks, the teacher said that in the 60s, Vietnam era, he said he was a student, so we were so angry that the war was going on, and we were protesting and so forth, that we wanted to kill everybody who disagreed with us. So that's an aggression as well. So where I'm getting is that if we that we could have our view and intention to improve things, but when we get obsessed and get extreme, become extremist ourselves, it stops being helpful. We are hurting ourselves, and we might hurt the situation. And the opposite side gets aggressive as well. The more successful attitude is when we believe that the opponents fundamentally have their own basic goodness. They are fundamentally good as well. They might have a wrong view. They might be confused, and we are confused. We also always have to accept the fact that I might be wrong. This is what I think, and I'm working towards. But having always the small window that I might be wrong too. I do think this is right, and I'm working. Again, I'm not saying that we throw our hands up and don't do anything. No, we develop our view, we develop ourselves, but if we close down and we become rigid, this is what I believe in, and I have to make everybody believe in what I believe, then we are becoming a nuisance, not only to ourselves, but also to others. Was it, did I answer the question? Yeah.
I was reading the other day that no matter what problem you have, time will conquer it. Like in a couple of months or a couple of hours or a week, it will be history and it will be resolved also. Even the war is going to end eventually one day.
That's true. That having a bigger perspective relaxes a little bit our uptightness. Again, there is a balance. It's not necessarily then you just sit and wait for the war to end. You might want to put some effort to help it end. Yeah.
I wanted to check in on something, maybe bigger issues of... say, just as an example, it was something that was written about in the write-up, you know, a health issue. So a friend has a life-threatening diagnosis, whether I'm the person supporting or perhaps even the person who's facing that. I suppose bringing all these principles could be helpful, but I'd still like to hear you speak to that. Thanks.
Yeah, those are very difficult. When you get a fatal diagnosis, that's a very, very difficult thing to swallow. And we have their denial reaction first, and then by the time we it's very hard. Or somebody dies. Your loved one dies. This is a very sensitive issue. I'll talk to this, but I'm just trying to choose my words carefully. One thing I can say is that there are many stories, and I heard some of them personally, when people get such diagnosis, One of the stories is quite famous, is Steve Jobs' talk. Maybe some of you heard he gave a talk on Stanford University's commencement. He talked about receiving a cancer diagnosis and how that changed his life. But the stories are that you suddenly start living your life much fuller than you used to. You realize that the death is not a theory, it's real. It becomes more tangible, and so we start valuing each second of our lives. So I heard several stories that suddenly that period between receiving diagnosis becomes a much more vivid and valuable. Maybe the word pleasant is not fully appropriate, but appreciated, very appreciated, engaged, and in some ways enjoyable part of life. So that's one part of the answer. But in order to be able to accept the situation and on one hand deal with it properly, on the other hand still fully enjoy the life rather than being entirely shut down, depressed. It's important to have this attitude that, yes, things happen and I will die one day, sooner or later anyway, everybody dies. And, okay, now I know that it gets much more real. And sometimes, obviously, people recover. But eventually we won't recover. Eventually we will die. And again, in Buddhism, that's a big theme. Death is a big theme. And from some point of view, a big reason why we want to practice and progress along the path is in preparation for the death. This opens another theme of karma and other lifetimes, which I don't want to go into now. But if we take these things, like even the diagnosis, as a lesson, this fell on me because I can use it for something. Like a flat tire is a small thing, obviously. But we can treat things as an opportunity to learn something, to use it to move forward, to grow from there.
So you mentioned that we first hear the teachings and then we contemplate the teachings and then we meditate. When we meditate, should we focus solely on the breath or should we also bring the contemplation of the teachings into the meditation?
Let me first give you a straightforward answer. When we are meditating, the way you meant the question, we only work on bringing the mind back to the breath. We want to teach the mind to cooperate. That's the flat initial answer. But then I want to say that if you take programs, the weekend programs or courses, we go through contemplative meditations too. There are contemplations as meditative practices. So there are types of meditations when you digest material in certain ways. There are specific techniques how to do that.
Thank you. Just wanted to follow up on this last question. If I may, because the path from hearing, right, the teachings to contemplation is direct, right? We first present some teachings, make sure we understand them, then we contemplate on them. How is this relevant to my life? How does this connect with? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so basically the idea of hearing, contemplating, meditating, the link between the first two is more explicit, right? It's like we hear specific teachings, views on karma, on this and that, and then we contemplate, what does this mean for me here and now and in my present situation? And it, you know, the basic shamatha meditation is just follow the breath. And so the link from contemplation mm-hmm. to meditation is not as explicit, at least for, you know, this introductory kind of meditation, you know.
Yeah, I understand. These are not meant necessarily to be so tightly linked as one leading into the next one. And when we say contemplation, it's not only the contemplation of you just of what you just heard. It's generally a contemplative attitude throughout your life, your day, to see, to look at our reactions, look at our own mind, notice our emotions. This is all part of that contemplation umbrella, contemplating our life. It does include what you meant, and that's what I meant when I said it, that we hear some teachings and we analyze them. That's part of it too. Now, when we meditate, I'll repeat again, we train the mind to cooperate and be present on the breath and the reality as it happens right now. But underneath that, we also subconsciously do infuse our mind with the teachings we accepted. It happens unintentionally, we don't put any effort into it, but it kind of soaks into us. When we relax the mind and let it be, when we stop spinning all these habitual thoughts, it creates open-mindedness that lets us realign ourselves with our new perspective.
Thank you very much for the talk. I have a question about, similar to the theme of illness, in terms of mental illness, in terms of preparing for an illness like dementia or schizophrenia, in which there's a loss of control, a loss of cognitive ability to still reason, but not death. I was just wondering if there's anything in Shambhala concerning that.
Yeah, that's a difficult reality also. When I some time ago I did ask myself where is the end of my confidence? And I thought that I'm okay with getting very sick, with losing a limb. I'll figure out how to live my life. But if I lose my ability to the mind abilities, then there is nothing I can do about it anymore. So that's a really tough one. And again, this is reality. It happens. My father has dementia now. When I ask him, how are you? I'm okay. He doesn't remember things. Things are done for him. He's barely alive at this point, but he's not complaining. It happens. It's more difficult for people around the person who has dementia than the person themselves. At least that's what I see. Because I guess there are different scenarios. This is something we cannot control. This happens. And so if you are the person who has it, there is nothing you can do. If you are the person who have to take care of, see the person who lost their control of their mind, then again, you deal with it the best you can. And that's all we can do. It might be hard emotionally, but we don't want to fight with reality. We just want to deal with it the best we can. Things don't happen by chance. When I was younger, again, my father was always very important to me, and I was thinking that someday he's going to die, and I thought, how could it be? How can, even pretty adult, I thought, it's very hard to digest to have the world where my father is not part of it. And now my father is sick for about more than a year now. He gradually got into that. And for me, I gradually learned, I realized that I didn't think he'll live, in a few days he'll be 87. And so it made me a lot easier to me to accept the fact that he's going to die. I think I'm psychologically ready for him to die because he's barely alive already. And so his gradual coming to that point made it actually easier for me to accept the fact that he's going to die. I'm not giving you a complete an answer what to do, but I'm giving you a different perspectives you might have on the situation. All right, I'm here. You can talk to me, but let's stop here. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Vegan. And thank you all for listening. Hey, visit us at ny.chambala.org for more information about classes and weekend retreats. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Chambala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. If you are in the New York City area, come see us in person. These podcast talks are recorded at our weekly Dharma gathering every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. You can come get meditation instruction or get a brush up, hear a great talk, meet some other people, have some cheese and hummus, and it's an all-around good time. I'm certain that you'll enjoy it. Later.